Hey guys, I'm your host Adam McCabe and welcome to the Gay Footballers Podcast. For my first time listeners, thank you so much for coming on out and giving this podcast a try. I really hope you enjoy. For my returning listeners, thank you so much for your dedicated support. I'm sorry it's been a while since I released an episode, but I really think you'll enjoy today's episode. For today's episode, I wanted to try something a little different and talk about something that interests me as a gay footballer. While I was out in LA this past August, I had the chance to meet and speak with Kyle Krieger. Now, some of you may know Kyle from his online or social presence. He's a really great photographer and videographer, and he's got a pretty big following on social media. He also used to do videos of men's grooming and really became popular in that sense online. What made me interested in interviewing Kyle was the fact that he is related to U.S. Women's National Team player Allie Krieger. Now, Allie is a pretty well-known athlete and player within the U.S. Women's National Team. She's won countless World Cups, she's a gold medalist, and she's got a pretty big following. So after this past Women's World Cup, with Allie joining the team very late on in the process, it made for a big story. And what was interesting to me was to follow the journey of Kyle, her brother, supporting Allie, and just seeing their relationship online throughout the World Cup. I thought it'd be a really interesting story just to talk to Kyle about his relationship with his sister and just to learn more about him as an individual behind the online presence. To tie it all together, we have two people, Allie and Kyle, who are both from the LGBTQ community, who have a love and passion for soccer, and this bond, soccer, has been able to create a really strong and passionate relationship between the two. This was a fantastic interview, and Kyle was just a really great down-to-earth person. Now, fair warning, you may hear a bit of snoring or just a little bit of net background noise throughout the podcast. Kyle had just started fostering his new dog, Angus, and he was pretty tired through the podcast. So he slept through it, and you may hear some snoring, but for me, that makes it really authentic. It's a part of Kyle that we'll learn about his love for dogs, and I thought I'd keep it in the podcast again just to make it authentic. So fair warning, it's not an audio miscue. It's something I've left in the podcast that, for me, makes it a little bit special and memorable. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce to you guys Kyle Krieger. Enjoy. Hey guys, so today I'm here with Kyle Krieger. Kyle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, of course. So thank you so much for having me.
So for the listeners, they know I kind of like to get to know the person I'm interviewing first, learn about their life, and we're going to start with kind of how you got involved with soccer and how that's been a part of your life from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Both my parents are PE teachers. And my dad played professionally and was a coach growing up. So I feel like athletics is always sort of like in my life, no matter what. And my sister and I both started, my sister played like a bunch of sports growing up. She played like basketball, volleyball, soccer. But from like very early on, it was like t-ball, soccer mostly though. You know, and I feel like when you grow up as a soccer family, like every vacation, sort of every weekend, every night after school, I mean, everything is dedicated to like playing. Especially when my dad was coaching like my team, Allie's team, and then he had like an older women's team. And he was also, we were also like, my dad also was like helping at the club, the local club, mm-hmm. Prince William County Soccer. He was a coach there, and then later on went to like help them with coaching and stuff. Yeah, I feel like it was always in like just ingrained in my family to be involved. And so we always played, and it kind of just engulfed like everything that we did pretty much besides education.
So I know you live in West Hollywood now, and you play with or played for WeHo Soccer Club?
Yeah, no, I played here in WeHo. Well, I guess after college I was looking for something to, like, I had, like, taken a couple years off just because I tore my meniscus in college. And so I stopped playing after that, and I didn't play for a while. And then I got to West Hollywood. And in New York, I played a little bit, too. But in West Hollywood, I found this team that one of my really good friends, Indar, was playing on. And I was like, can I just come out? And he was like, yeah, they sent me up for tryouts. And there was like this tryout in the spring. And I went, and honestly, like, it not playing and for so long and not like stretching properly. Like, I was using muscles that you probably just don't use at like the regular gym or CrossFit, which is basically my workout. And so after the first day, my like groin was so tight, I couldn't even put on underwear in the morning. Like, it was so bad. And I remember being sore. Like, I think I just pulled it, basically. And yeah, I was sore for, I feel like I wasn't at 100% for the rest of the tryout. You know, it was the day one. But I ended up making it, and we had a really fun season. And then halfway through the season, I tore my ACL, which was just like kind of like a slap in the face. It kind of felt like, you're just really too old to be doing this. And I thought, like, I felt fit, you know, like, I CrossFit every day, mm-hmm. and I work out at the gym every day. I grew up playing my whole life. Like, I was like, I'm gonna be fine. And my sister's fiance actually tore her ACL 3 times. And I was always sort of like, thank God I've never torn my ACL, you know. But in a 7-a-side game, just on like a silly tackle, like, I just heard that pop that you hear. And I was like, you know, like, I just knew right away.
So you may or may not know, I, in April, tore my ACL. So were you tackled? Did you tackle? Because for me, mine was not movement-based. So someone came in and tackled me. Mm. And actually, we didn't know it was torn because it didn't blow up. I didn't hear a pop. And unfortunately, the beloved MRI,
yeah,
the worst news of the day. But do you remember, was someone come through you or did you tackle? And
it was, I remember it vividly. It was like, a defender had the ball and I was sort of like going in to tackle. And it just was like a weird, there was another one of my players coming from a different direction too. And we all sort of met at the ball at the same time. And I feel like my foot just dragged with the ball,
yeah,
like a little bit in a weird direction. And I just heard it pop, and I continued to try to play, and I just, like, the ref was like, you can't even run, because we were down a player, so, because there was, like, no one there, and I was like, well, we're at 5 players, we're gonna lose, and we were up, and it was bad, it was messy, and yeah, so I just knew right away, but it was definitely, like, we were all sort of going in for the tackle, but I was coming in a little late, just because the defender already had the ball, but yeah, it's sort of an indescribable feeling, like, you sort of know just right away, and you're like, wow. And my sister had the same thing happen when she tore her ACL. What happened to you? Someone came in to her tackle her, and then she was out for a year.
So any advice for me? I'm 3 months in the journey, so I'm kind of in that strengthening phase. Any advice? Because I know we're kind of all in this like brotherhood we don't want to be in.
Yeah.
This kind of, I know that feeling. I know that journey. Any advice?
I guess around 3 months I started, like, I was back in the gym, mm-hmm. a little bit. And I was doing, you know, anything to sort of, yeah, strengthen was good. I was going to rehab. Like twice a week, 3 times a week or something, which was worth the money. And my insurance was helping with that too. So I was grateful that I had that luxury and privilege. That was great. And it kind of feels like the strengthening and like the rehab doesn't really do anything. But I feel like it really, because I'm just like, is this really helping? You know, it's kind of just like silly things, like, you know, just like lightweight, and you're like using bungee cords and like, I mean, you're not even sweating. I'm like, this is kind of feels pointless, but I think it really did help with my mobility. And I'm obviously not a professional, so I have no idea. So I was just listening to them, and they were recommended to me by the national team, and so it was great. I recommend following through with that, even when it feels like you're feeling good again, mm-hmm. is to continue and follow through. And then also I was doing a lot of like up and down movements in the gym, so like squats and stuff that was just that felt very safe, like not cutting side to side, but it made me feel like I was getting stronger again, because lifting heavy weight, even though my knee was like really sensitive, so that helped a lot.
So now, as you kind of spoke about, you found this home or this new passion within CrossFit. So can you kind of talk about finding CrossFit? I'm not very good at lifting weight overhead, so I kind of shy away from CrossFit. There are some aspects of CrossFit I love, obviously being competitive, anything lower, as soccer players are pretty good at lower extremities, but talk about finding CrossFit and how that's kind of become a passion of yours now.
I do love it. It makes me feel like an athlete again. It makes me, I mean, not to take anything away from CrossFit, but like it's not the same as being out on a field, but it sort of ticks certain boxes that you feel when you're in like off season training, or just the idea of like, it can be competitive and comparative, or it cannot be. Like sometimes I put my scorepan on the board and it's just like a smiley face. Because, like, I just don't really feel like competing sometimes. But every now and then when there's, like, a few straights in the room that I, like, want to beat, I will definitely add my score to the board just so they know. But, you know, it is really fun in that way. I'm really passionate about it. It is really fun to learn how to lift in, like, an Olympic lifting sort of way, because I never did that really growing up. I was always sort of weak and a little bit scrawny. And like quick on the field, but not really very big or like really strong, I guess. Maybe on my lower half, my upper body was always kind of like just like leaner. And CrossFit helped me develop to learn how to like lift properly. And it also has that competitive aspect. And then also it has very much of like a, there's like a circuit training vibe there too, right? So like usually starts with a warm up and then a strengthening piece. And then there's like a circuit sort of high speed interval, you know, something where you're like, yeah, you're like sweating, yeah. You're like sweating hard. Yeah, conditioning basically. And so it really gets me. And it's like an hour, it feels great. The community's great. It kind of feels like a team. Everybody's very supportive. And it's really challenging, you know. So I like, and I sit here now and I am so sore. Like we did front squats yesterday and I like failed a few times. So I was like kind of pushing myself and I could not get out of bed today. You know what I mean? And like, I just miss that feeling of like being so sore. Cause when I'm at the regular gym, I like, I'm on my phone, I'm sitting on the bench, I'm bored, I'm like staring at boys, I'm not paying attention to my workout, not really sweating. But at CrossFit, my phone is down and like I'm focused and I like want to do a good job. And so I really like that about it.
I try to tell people this, like I need someone to yell at me. And that's why I was really, really, I was really coachable. When a coach told me to do something, I did it. And that kind of translates to this environment. I need someone to say, you have to do this at this way, or and I will go do it. And that's just how I think the athlete and the soccer player in me. We're going to continue this like fitness role. I saw this past summer, I believe, or earlier this year, you were doing the AIDS life cycle. I would love to you to talk about kind of what that's about. And that experience, I see this like sweet bike over in the corner that I'm sure is like super lightweight and talk about that experience, because that whole journey I know is amazing. So
it is great. This year is my third year doing it. I just am a firm believer of like giving away what was freely given to me. And I feel like I have the privilege of just being treated so well in the community coming out. And I feel like a lot of the gay men who died in the 80s were on the front lines, or they would have been during our fight for equality. And so it's just a nice nod for me to give back to them and to also people who are currently living with HIV. And it just makes me feel good to be surrounded with them and educate myself and learn how to fight stigma and remove it from society so that people can be treated just in a more human way. And just because they have a virus doesn't mean that they should be treated any different. So it's sort of like one way to get involved, and it also encompasses like other things that I love, like fitness. And the community is just so loving. The first time I did it, I was really scared. It was really hard, but it was fun. I'm sort of isolated and introverted in a way. I'm not like great at talking to people when it comes to like public and public outings and social anxiety. However, this is such a love bubble that it really pulled me out of all of that. And I felt really safe and it was great. The second time I did it with a group of guys, which was really fun. And this third time I did it, one of my best friends, who is an Olympic skier, wanted to get a team together. And he just asked me to join. And I was like, yeah, of course. So I kind of felt like a veteran on our team because not many other people on the team had done it. So I was sort of helping them figure out what it was going to be like. And it was just, honestly, it was my favorite year this year doing it. We had so much fun and we raised so much money. Gus raised like over he like set the record. It was like over 250,000. I don't even know, like a lot.
Yeah.
And I raised maybe like 55, which was the most that I raised. And the rest of my team, I mean, it was insane. We raised over 300,000. There was like 10 people on our team. So I was really, really happy. And it's like one of the hardest things that I've ever done when it comes to And it's not even hard. Okay, I'm gonna lie. It's hard physically. Yes, your body is. My body held up really great, and I feel like I didn't train at all. But I trained in CrossFit every day. But I never like really got on a bike before I went because I just. It's not like I don't love riding a bike. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not like gonna sit around and you know go on. I rode to downtown one time, which is like. You know, 5 miles, and I was like, okay, I'm good. Dude, like, I don't need to, like, I just want to get it done, you know? Because the enjoyable part for me is not the actual riding. It's, like, everything else, yeah. Right? It's, like, all the rest stops and, like, hanging out with the guys and the girl. I mean, half the ride is street, pretty much, but, like, the breakfast and camping and, you know, it's just so much. There's so much to it, and the riding is fun because you're sort of, you know, you're with a group of people, but you're in your head a lot, which is, like, for me, a dangerous neighborhood. Because, like, you take one wrong turn, and I can just, like, jump myself into some terrible idea. Yeah, it was the best year. It is very challenging because my body held up great. However, I was, for the week after, I was so sore, yeah. You know? I mean, you're riding, like, between 60 and 100 miles a day, and it's a lot, you know? It's a lot. And it's a lot of time just to think because you can't use music or have headphones in or anything. So I'm thinking a lot, and... Which is also exhausting because I just got so much on my head, you know? I mean, it's like so much on my mind. But anyway, yeah, it's. Have you ever thought about doing it?
So my dad was a huge cyclist and he really pushed me to get into it growing up. And I was successful at soccer. And so all my time had to really be spent towards soccer. As you know, like every weekend you're at a tournament. I was able to like play abroad at a young age. So my dad really pushed me, but I've always thought of it. And I saw how much fun your team had this year, and I was like, I should do that. I just think it would be, like you said, the journey is the part that you love about it, but it's something that I'm like, okay, I think I've done enough SoulCycle classes, like, I think I can do it, I think it's something I would love to, like, do, so it's great to hear you talk about it, because I don't know, it looked like a lot of fun this year.
Yeah, it was great. It's always great, but it just is like a really feel good. It's a really feel good time. You know, I mean, everybody is there with a common goal and to, you know, help people that are living with HIV and to help them get better access to things that they need.
Yeah.
Which inevitably makes their life better, hopefully. And it just seems like, the money just helps so much. Yeah. And it does so many things for people that just can't get access to it because they don't have the same privileges as other
people. So you guys may be, during this podcast, you may hear like a snore or some licking or some tapping, or you maybe even hear like something run into the mic, which I may leave because that's like makes this episode really authentic. But I was greeted by a very, very lovely dog that Kyle is fostering currently. Yeah. Can you talk about, I know you had a dog previously, yeah. Kind of talk about why you foster dogs, like where did that passion come from?
Actually today's the anniversary of her death is the 27th. I know, devastating.
I'm so sorry. I not brought it up, of course.
No, it's okay. No, she was just like, you know, the love of my life. Like she's like, yeah, she died a year ago today, and we were on a hike, and yeah, we were just on a hike, and she a hike that we did all the time. And we're at the top of Griffith Park, and she just like started getting really dizzy, and not dizzy, but stumbling. And I was like, this is weird. And we had just had water, and like, I feel like it was later in the afternoon. It wasn't too hot, but she just like collapsed. She never got up again. We like were bringing our water back and forth, and like, you know, like people, onlookers were like stopping by and helping bring water. And she just was panting and couldn't cool down. And, we were giving her CPR. We had like the vet on the phone. I mean, it was like a whole thing.
Yeah.
And giving a dog CPR is really challenging because you just don't really know if it's even working.
Yeah.
I mean, their mouth is sort of open. They're panting. You don't want to like take any breath from them. They, you know, still like, it was so strange. She wasn't necessarily panting when we were giving her CPR, but I didn't want to like remove, like in case she was still, it's so hard to tell.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I could tell that she sort of wasn't really breathing. Anyway, it was bad. And then it wasn't successful. And then I just like was like, I'd rather just have a few minutes here with her while her eyes are still open rather than like continue to give her CPR, you know. Anyway, so then she died. And that day on the hill, up there in the middle of the mountain, it was so hard. And yeah, it's been like a really long recovery. It's really strange. It like feels... Like, today, it feels okay.
Mm-hmm.
But for, like, a few months after, I think I was just in denial. Like, I just was devastated, you know? Just because it's also such a traumatic way for an animal to go. Mm-hmm. But fostering animals now, it's been a year. I started fostering dogs, big mastiffs like her. Maybe started in May. So it'd been May, June, July. So 3 months. So I guess 9 months after her death. And it's really nice because it's sort of like I see little idiosyncrasies that she has, mm-hmm. and I see them in her, and I see those idiosyncrasies in the other dogs as well. And it's sort of just like, it's like a nice like reminder. It makes me smile, like, you know. But they're also so, they're their own dogs too. Like, they're individuals. They, you know, are so different than her. But it's funny that the breed sort of carries similarities with each dog. But yeah, it just sort of warms my heart to have a pup around, you know, and to be able to take care and to nurture another animal back to health. Like, these animals have been mistreated and abused and kept in really terrible conditions, and it's sort of like we heal each other. My therapist and I talk about it, like, because, like, for example, Angus is just so loving and so kind. He just had a really rough go when he was a kid, or when he was like small. He was kept as a breeding dog in a really small pen and sort of just used for that for a long time. And then he was like cast out on the street, and then they picked him up on the street, and he was gonna be euthanized. And then someone had called this foundation that I work with, and they're like, hey, do you have anybody for this dog? He's gonna be euthanized, and if you could have a home for him, we could like save him. And so they just called me, and I said, yeah. But it does, it feels like it's so heartwarming. It generally makes me feel like I am helping out an animal that wouldn't, you know, necessarily be alive or be able to help themselves without it, or just had a really rough go and they didn't deserve that. So it just like this, it just feels really good, you know. And it also feels like I get to heal with them, like they heal me too, you know, just about how to practice love and tolerance and patience and intimacy with like an animal, like just getting close, letting someone like get close to you again, or not someone, but a dog get close to you again after losing one. And it's just like a practice. Yeah, you know, it takes a minute.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. I really appreciate that. Got one more thing kind of about you, and then we're going to talk about your sister.
No, I'm kidding.
So I've known about you in terms of what you do in media-wise and for this community, but I saw you released a film, and it was in like a film festival, I think, is where I first heard about it. It's called Boyfriend, correct? Yeah. And you're an MFA student currently, so can you talk about like why you've chosen that, and can you talk about what that experience making Boyfriend, and that was like your first, I'm guessing, first film in a festival, so you can speak about kind of that whole, all of that for us.
Of course. Thank you for bringing that up. I guess it sort of started, I was making videos on YouTube for a while, and most of them were like men's grooming lifestyle videos. And then I would always, I have an interest obviously in like LGBTQ activism. And so I wanted to make, after I saw Moonlight, I was like, I just would love to tell more narrative stories about, just more narrative queer stories, basically. Anything on the spectrum. And just amplify voices that potentially wouldn't be able to be amplified without a bigger platform, or, you know, help these stories be told, or even whether I'm producing them or directing them or giving them visibility or any, you know, anything. And Moonlight, I feel like, really was just, you know, it's one of the best films I've ever seen, and it really inspired me to just take action to get into film school. My first degree was in nutrition and dietetics, and I never finished school because of a drug habit. And then I went into hair school, and I finished hair school. And then, so this is my third time in school, but it feels like where I'm sort of supposed to be. In film, I don't know necessarily like in school, but definitely like making stuff like this. It kind of feels like a graduate program to my YouTube channel. And I still love making YouTube videos, but I haven't made one in a while. I just feel like I've just hit like a, like a creative slump when it comes to YouTube stuff. I just don't feel super passionate about men's grooming anymore and like men's lifestyle stuff. I feel more passionate about LGBTQ activism. I feel like it's much more where I'm supposed to be. Grooming stuff is definitely necessary. It's great. But like, I don't want to necessarily lend all of my attention to that. I feel like in the world that we live in today, where people in Russia are being killed because their details are put up on a gay hunting website, or in Chechnya, when people are being rounded up and kept in camps and tortured, and there's countries where being gay and being LGBTQIA+ is still illegal, and laws to that you can be thrown in jail or killed is just like unacceptable, and I just don't want to be a part of that world, and I just want to lend my platform to help bring attention to that or change. And I think narrative filmmaking is one way that I could do that. So that's why I wanted to go to school. And Boyfriend is just like a queer love story about two guys that meet by happenstance at a coffee shop. And I guess I don't really know how much to give away, but it feels like some, I just, honestly, I was just winging it. Like, I don't even want to like lie about it. Like, we were sort of, it's the film that I put on my YouTube channel to get into film school. It was like my application basically. Yep. And I was sort of winging it. I like had a small crew of like five people. I like paid a sound guy, and my friend who is a director also like assisted me and like produced it. And then my friend Daniel shot it, and we were just like, let's just wing it. You know, let's just like try to make, we did it in a day. And you know, I was just like, I hope this is great. We like wrote it on set. I was like giving them lines, but I was like, let's talk about this. And then, you know, we had certain lines, but we also did a lot of it on the cell phone. So a lot of it just like feels very 2000, well, it was 18. So like very, just like current when it comes to communication online, like cell phone usage, texting and stuff. So I loved it so much. And it was like one time where I felt very alive directing. It just feels very good to collaborate with other people and to make something. Yeah, one thing I really love about film is that it is a collaborative effort, that it is a team, that you can surround yourself with people who are better than you at all of these things, and then they can help you make something great. And it's also nice to have a team that supports you in being a beginner, because I feel like it's very hard for me to be a beginner when it comes to like ego and not wanting to look stupid, and also having a platform and being a beginner, having a lot of eyes on you, like potentially I do at times, is scary, because I don't feel like I have time to like be bad or like mess up, because everything I put out people are sort of gonna see, and I'm new at this, I'm not great at this, like I'm a beginner, you know. So every time I throw something up, I'm like, it's awful, but I hope you like it, yeah. You know? And it's nice because I have learned to sort of just put that aside and just make stuff and allow myself to be humbled by being a beginner. I do the same thing in like yoga and CrossFit too. And you know what I mean? It's sort of like, you're not good, but you're just going to have to deal with it and get better, you know, and keep practicing. So I do that with film too. And it makes me really happy. And it also makes me feel like I can make an impact more so than making grooming videos on YouTube.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting, that experience that you're talking about, where, you're putting yourself out there, mm-hmm. right, for criticism, and it is a very tough place to be, because we're very guarded, we don't want to be shot down, but no, I have seen Boyfriend, I suggest everyone to go see it.
Thank you.
No, it's just really good. I think what you said, it's very current. I think that, just that, the situation, like you said, how it was portrayed, it's very current to this day and age and this community, and how dating can be or can work out. So I thought it was good.
Thank you.
Big props to you. And I know we're gonna switch to soccer. I just thought of one more thing. You have some amazing photography skills, or I think you do. Where does that like create? Like, I'm looking around, even in your apartment right now, of these framed photos. Where does this creativity come from? I mean, I definitely am not the artsy type in this way, but I mean, it's a gift. It really is a gift, and I'm just curious. You know, where some of, I see feet on the beach. I see, you know, I just see all kinds of amazing work, and I've seen your photography online, so. Mm. Can you speak of where you come up with these things where you're like halfway in the sand and you know, just random things like that? Like, where does this come from?
I honestly, I don't know. I don't really know. I just really, I love the idea of visual storytelling. And I feel like, which is another reason why I love narrative film, is because it feels like you're telling, you're definitely telling a story. And to be able to tell a story with one image is very cool too. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a full beginning, middle, and end, but, or part of a story, a snapshot of a story, a visual diary A lot of my images, I feel like, are, if I'm feeling a certain way about something, then I usually will go out and shoot. A lot of my images are self-portraiture, because in the beginning I was really scared about asking other people to shoot, similar to what I was saying about with film, is like I just didn't want to like shoot something and then be like, oh god, this is awful, you know, so I would just shoot myself. And I don't really wear, like, I'm not really good with like clothes or fashion. I sort of wear the same thing every day, so, and I think the body is very beautiful just with like natural skin tone, so I would just, a lot of it included like absence of clothing, not necessarily to like be nude, but just because I feel like skin tone in nature just like is really pretty. And so it was also like a very, it was also felt like a meditation for me too. So I would just go out and explore, and it felt like a healing time for me. It just felt like a time to be creative and kind of access feelings that I was feeling about something and kind of put it into an image or a position or a pose or where I was at the lighting, or, you know, it just all sort of would be how I was feeling. And I just talked to myself, you know, just like they were really bad in the beginning. And then I started to create like a style, I guess. Everybody has their own style, you know, you just sort of are gonna wing it, and mm-hmm. then you're gonna learn, and then you're gonna develop a style just based on how you shoot. And there's no wrong or right way to do it. You just go out, and doing it is just healing for me. So I just kept going. And then over time, kind of nail down the details and create things that you think look great. And it's just nice that other people seem to think that they look great too. Feels like I'm very grateful that other people like them. I'm sure there's lots of people that don't. But you really, you know, and then be able to share it like online is a nice privilege, that you can get criticism from people. And usually I feel like my critiques are always very positive, which is nice. And I do get negative ones too. And not negative, but ones where there's room for growth, and which I always welcome, because that's great. I don't really feel like I have that many trolls online. Like, no one always says like terrible things. Like, every now and then, yeah, but I don't know. People are always so kind about it, and or just don't say anything, which I think is also nice. But I do appreciate the critique. I do think that it is very helpful as an artist to be like someone to offer where you have room to grow. But no, thank you for saying that. And that sort of, and photography sort of led me into film, you know, or just a video.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's
go. Did that answer your question?
It did.
Sorry.
It did. It's, I mean, I think, as you said, everyone has their own style, and I think that's something you can tell about, like, if you go through your Instagram or whatever, you can tell there is a, like, a style. You can tell there's, like, the way you edit, just the way that, and again, it's, these are very, like, the photos are just all different. I think that's the interesting thing, is, like, you can be in the woods, you're in the desert, you're on the beach. It's just very different. And and it's, like you said, it has its own aesthetic. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's, no, you didn't answer the question.
Okay, good. Thank you.
But we're going to go ahead and take this detour. And
yeah, enough about me.
No, not that.
No, I'm kidding. Okay.
I mean, as we talked about, this podcast is about people who play or in the world of soccer and identify as LGBTQ. And obviously, this past summer was the Women's World Cup, a huge event that our women won, played fantastically, but...
I mean, I feel like they could have done a little better.
I mean...
Allie could have played a little bit more.
No. But no, there's always storylines. I mean, Megan was probably one of the biggest storyline, and just everything she accomplished and her voice, but... kind of leading up to the World Cup, one of the bigger, maybe not bigger stories, but one of the stories was the re-emergence of your sister.
Oh, yeah.
And so when I mean, of course I know of your sister, I watch soccer, and it was just very interesting because it was the kickoff tour, or the tour to the tournament, and that's when she got brought in, right? I think it was two games left, and she started a full match, and that was really a lot of the talk from the commentators. I think Julie Fowley really like was like, okay, here's Allie Krieger coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
This is like her time to win that spot, and she did. And fast forward a few months, and your sister is playing in the World Cup final. So for me, I was like, wow, this is a great story, and here's a person and her brother who has played soccer.
Yeah.
They have a relationship. And I was like, I've got to interview you and hopefully her. But anyways, this is where we're going to transition to. So kind of talk about growing up with your sister playing soccer, being successful. My brother's kind of also had this relationship of a brother or a sibling being a really good athlete. So kind of talk about that journey and growing up first with your sister.
I mean, I feel like we were, well, we're 13 months apart.
Okay.
So we're really, I mean, we're close. We weren't always like as close as we are now friendship wise, but even from the get-go, like, I always knew that she, like, she always stood out as, like, the best on her team or one of the top players. And, you know, I really feel like I started to notice that when she was in maybe middle school, high school, early high school, and she would be starting all the time and, you know, just, she was always the smallest player on the field as well. So I was always a little bit surprised by that because I was just like, how is this little, like, nugget like starting with like all these girls that are like, you know, much taller than her and stronger than her, but she always found a way to sort of excel and to succeed. And I remember like her first accolade that I remember was like Gatorade Player of the Year in high school, and I was, she was maybe like, I don't even know what year she was, but it felt young, and I was like, oh, this bitch really, you know. And, and like she was always on the front page of every newspaper, and like I was always in like the honorable mention, you know, like it always felt like I was a little bit in her shadow. But it wasn't like, it never felt competitive between the two of us. But I think I internalized that a little bit, and I sort of felt, and I was also sort of realizing that I was gay too, so it, that compounded with like being second best in my family. Like my mom and dad, look, they're great parents. They did a great job, both of us, and I'm really grateful for them. However, I do feel like they are closer with her than they are with me. And I play a role in that as well. Like, I feel like it's not just them. But, and they don't, I wouldn't say favor is a strong word, but they reach out to her more, they talk to her more, and it's not like she really, like, sometimes she'll complain to me about it, but, you know, like, it's not like she's, they don't love her more, but it is, you know, she's a lot of what a parent would love. You know what I mean? Like they, or parents like my parents, they get to share in a lot of her success. And I'm sure that feels like very good. And in comparison to a drug addict who is, was at that time when she was sort of excelling in school, I was like getting high every day. So it makes sense. But they were always there for me too. And growing up, it really felt like we were really connected and there for each other. And especially when I started to realize that I was gay, and she became such like a big support for that in, early on. And so, and then she didn't realize until like a little bit after me, where then I got to be like, have her back as well. But yeah, I you know, she always was like, so good. And I just kind of knew that it would keep going.
I don't think I did your sister like enough credit by introducing her. And I was like ferociously trying to like find the exact accolades. So hopefully I'll get to interview her and she'll get to correct me on this.
Yeah, no.
But I think, your sister Allie is what, a 3-time World Cup participant with the U.S. Women's National Team. And I guess 2-time going to the Olympics with the team, maybe 1. I know she was like injured.
Yeah. The year that they won the gold, she was injured for ACL.
Okay.
Right before it, actually. A couple of minutes before. And then the year after, they lost in Sweden, to Sweden and Brazil.
Okay.
Or like the next time. And the first time, I feel like, I think it was 2. I think there's 2 in there, but I don't know. I don't know.
Anyways, I mean.
She's an Olympian.
Yeah, an Olympian. An Olympian, yeah. A World Cup winner. I mean, it's. She's at the top of the game for women's soccer. I mean, and
she went to Penn State and she played there.
Currently with Orlando Pride.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, again, this is a huge athlete we're talking about. So I think I didn't do her enough gratitude by introducing her. But anyways, again, the World Cup was this summer. And one thing I noticed, especially for you, and actually you had a tweet. It was really funny. Again, you're her brother. You're just in that much as the in the action as we are. But you've got this relationship with your sister, right?
Like different access.
Yes. And I remember, I think you tweeted something like...
Oh, God. I'm scared of these tweets.
It was like... You're like, oh, I'm getting like all these soccer feet people like following me now, and it was just interesting. It was to me it was a hilarious tweet because, you know, you're tweeting your reactions to the game and you're getting all these people who follow you too. But it was interesting because a ton of soccer people are now like interested in what you're saying because of the access, but also just that you're an interesting person, who your sister is. So I think it was interesting because. here you are now, you're a soccer guru, you know, of sorts.
Thank you. I don't really know what I'm talking about per se. I just have an opinion, and I just have a few eyes online watching, and people that just love Allie, and I sort of, you know, I get scared because, like, I'll tweet I'm a fan, basically.
Exactly.
Like, I just am a fan who happens to, like, be related to a player. And everything that I say online is my opinion, you know? And she will get on, like, she'll text me after the game and she'll be like, I can't believe you tweeted that. Like, you can't tweet things, you know? So we have certain rules that I don't. But she, like, allows me to be a fan. And she, and I, you know, I have in my bio that, like, these opinions are my own, and she honestly is so much more humble and kind and sweet and not combative like me, whereas I tend to be a little bit more sharp on my opinions and vocal about them. She's more private and, like, reserved, and that's just how I've always been. And I feel like, just like anybody else on Twitter, I'm mindful about not dragging anyone who is. I try to be mindful about not say anything unkind to people that are on our team, and I know that everyone's doing their best at all times. However, it still doesn't mean that I can't share what I think, you know? But I really love everyone on the team, you know? I really do. I feel like I get along with everyone. There's a few that I get along with, like, much better just because we're more close. But yeah, it is. She does, like, tend to say, like, could you just not with this, you know, don't touch this? And I'm like, yeah, of course. But it's funny. She doesn't put that many rules on it. But.
I know. It was for me, it was just a funny thing. I remember you just saying that, and I was like, it's an interesting balance. You're walking a line, but also you're a fan, as you said.
Yeah. I want to just have, like, a few followers and just be able to say what I want to say. I don't want to have to hide what I want to say because who's following me. Like, I know Jill's wife, or Jill, maybe potentially sees things that I say. So I am mindful that I'm not critical in a severe negative way. However, because I love the national team, I still feel like I'm allowed to critique it, right? Like, just like a politician. If you have a politician that you love, it's also fair to critique them in a positive, negative way. And, like, I don't necessarily feel like the things I say are attacking. I don't incite violence. I don't want anybody to hurt them or touch them or tweet at them or anything. I just feel like I'm allowed to share my opinion. I mean, that's what social media is all about, right? I mean, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. People are listening. They're like, no, Queen, you can't say that. But, I don't ever try to say anything that's hurtful.
Something you said and something I saw firsthand is Allie herself has, I would say, a team of loyal followers. Mm-hmm. I mean, when it was announced that she was back on the team, I mean, there were so many people that were so happy and were, like, waiting for this day to come, mm-hmm. right? Because, and I'll let you talk about this. I mean, there's a ton of people who support her, and I guess for me, I would love to know, did you think she was going to make this? I mean, obviously, I think you thought your sister was good enough to make the roster, but mm-hmm. she wasn't really in the picture, right? So what was your thought process on that? And I guess the day that you heard that it was announced that mm-hmm. she made the roster, what was that feeling for you? How was that journey from her kind of being nowhere involved with the team to a couple weeks before the roster announcement, she's playing and fighting for her position?
Yeah, I mean, it felt great.
Yeah.
It felt really good. It felt validating. It felt like I felt like of course she should be on the team. Like, you know what I mean? She won you a World Cup last time, and she played so much the time before. You know what I mean? She's at, like, the highest level. She's been there for so long. I feel like she's been a part of this team for so long, and she's been working so hard to get here. So, like, it only makes sense that she hasn't, she's just as good, or, you know, if not better than players that are already on the roster, you know, that you have there. So I always was really confused why she wasn't there. And I get the sense that the coach wanted to make sure that she had the best team going into the World Cup. And that meant that she had to try out players from all over the country in certain spots. And that just happened to be Allie's spot. And it seemed like she was desperately trying to find someone to play in the right back position, and maybe she just couldn't, you know? And then she was like, look, maybe I had, maybe Allie is the best player that we have in that spot. And I tried all these younger girls and no one is that good or as good as Allie. And so let's take the best players. So they took Kelly, Emily, and Allie. I guess they're sort of like the right-ish back positions. And I happen to love all three players. I love Kelly and we have a really good relationship. And so when I tweet about Allie, it's not that I mean that Kelly shouldn't be on the field. It just means that I just want Allie on the field. I also want Kelly on the field. It's not my problem to figure out who should be on the field. I just want them both on there. You know, so I feel like sometimes I get slack, like, oh, what about Kelly? I'm like, she could be there too. I'm not saying that. I just say it. I want Allie to be there. Yeah. So it felt very validating to have Allie back on the roster to hope that she would get some minutes. And I knew that she wouldn't play every minute like she did in 2015. Well, maybe she came out for 15 minutes, I think, to let someone go in one game in 15. And that was sort of like the win for me. Like, I feel like she had one. And I was like, look, you have, like, this is not how she felt, but I was like, you have one. This is like sprinkles on top. Go really enjoy yourself. Have a blast. But like, you have one. Like, it was such a Cinderella moment that you won on the same field that you tore your ACL on. Like, it was just insane. You played every minute pretty much. You know, it was just like, that to me was the most emotional one. This to her, she loved this one the most because she felt like she worked her ass off to get back here. And I guess I didn't even realize it as a fan. I didn't realize that she, I mean, I knew she was training every day and I would be like, girl, it's off season. Like, what are you training for? She's like, I'm trying to get back on this team, you know? And she would train every single day with Ashlyn, without her, on her own, with a trainer, you know, she was working her butt off so that if Jill ever did call that she could go and that she could be right up there. You know, there's like facts that she'll tell me that I'm like, that the team doesn't share because like with fitness stuff, like I feel like it's private, but she'll be like, you know, she'll tell me things and that she's like, I know I was working hard, if not harder than everyone else, because when we're doing fitness, I'm up there, you know? And so it's really nice to hear and I'm happy to see her succeed in such a way where it can just, you know, assure her that she's supposed to be here, you know, that she is still solid at 35, you know, so, or she'll be 35 in a couple of days, or tomorrow, actually, but, yeah, so it just felt really good for me, and I'm not even involved, really, but it was just nice to see someone that you love so much reach their dream again, you know, in a different way, with a different story this time.
Can you kind of compare attending World Cups and how they were different from you? Was this one a different feel for you than attending 2011 or 2015? Like, was there a different vibe to that? Or, I mean, are they all kind of the same for you?
2000 and, what was that, the other one, 11?
Yeah.
2011, I went to a couple games, then flew home. That was in Germany? Yeah. 2011, I went to a couple games in Germany, and then I flew home, and I had to work in New York City, and then I flew back for the final, and, like, that was intense, because when she scored the PK that put them into the final, or the semifinal, I forget, or the PK in the semifinal, I was in New York at a bar by myself, watching the game, and, like, stood on the bar, and people were like, what is happening? Like, the game's on, but, like, no one was really that into it. I was like wearing my jersey. It was so funny. And then I flew. My work wasn't gonna like my. It was like at a hair salon. They didn't really understand sports because like they're the gays that like don't really watch sports. They're like, well, you just were there. Like you can't take off more work. And I was like, I'm going back.
Yeah.
It's either. And then oh my god, just so happens that our district manager is from Boston, and she was like, obviously no sports because she's from Boston. She's like, what? Of course you can go. Yeah. World Cup final. Like yeah, go. And so my meeting manager was like, what? I don't, you know, didn't even understand. Anyway, so I went, but I flew. The feeling was so intense because I flew after work on a red eye, arrived in the morning, had the game in the evening, then stayed for the after party, which was sad because we lost, and then flew home that morning. So I was there for like less than 24 hours. It was like in and out because I had to go to work the next day. So it was kind of a waste, but my uncle actually paid for that flight, which was so nice of him as a gift. And I was still so happy to be there. So that one was like a little bit jarring because we just didn't win.
Yeah.
And that PK, the shootout, I mean, everything was awful. I mean, it was terrifying. The whole stadium was quiet. I was so nervous, but
It was, that one was just a weird vibe, but I'm really happy Japan won that year because I feel like it was a Cinderella story for them, and I really feel like they deserved it, and it was so nice to help. It was like a year that they had
tsunami,
the,
right?
Yeah, the tsunami, yeah. And it just felt like they needed to win that year, and I thought they deserved it.
Soccer lords gave it to them. Yeah, soccer gods were there for them. Yeah.
And then we got to kick the rest the next year, the next time. So I was really happy about that. 2015 felt incredible. I mean, it was amazing. And I went to those games at the end. And, you know, I was just so, I was so nervous and so excited. And the feeling that you're in, the intensity of the, when you're like, when you just want someone to win so bad because you're related to them, is, or they're your best friend. Like, I can't explain the intensity of the emotion. It just, the anxiety that I feel, it is almost unsettling. Like, I can't even be sitting down. You know, I'm sweating, shaking. You know, it's insane. And that's also because I'm pretty anxious from the get-go. Like, just, like, how I am naturally. My mom is probably my mom's fault. Like, she is also that way. So, it's vibrating, basically. The whole stadium, and so that doesn't help. And that what happened in 2015 when we went up, like, 3-0, I was like, that is a gift. Do you know what I mean? That is, like, if you are anxious like me, that is just the best feeling. I mean, I was hugging Jill's wife. We were, like, jumping up and down. I was, like, so excited. And that was amazing. So that win to me was the most emotional. I was the most emotional. I was crying afterwards. There was like pictures on the internet of me just like sobbing when Allie came over to like jump up and like give me a hug. And it just felt the most pure to me because that the story that she had tore her ACL in that field and then came back 2 years later to play every minute and to win again on that same field, it just felt like just perfect. You know, it was just like a ribbon on it, just like tied a bow on it. And it was like done. So this year, I just hope it's the last one because I can't do it again. Or she will not ever do it again. She's too old. But I just feel like I went into this one with a little bit more, not resentment, but it just felt like, yeah, resentment is the wrong word. I just was like, I don't know what the word is. I just felt like she should not have to have gone through the 2 years of like, of not knowing why she was removed to then just be brought back, you know, like, She got removed from the roster without any explanation, really. And Jill never told her. Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't present for their conversation. But I get the sense that she left the roster without any real explanation about why, after just winning the World Cup. So it does make sense that you're going to try to get, as you know, to make sure that you're going to the next World Cup with the best roster, and to try a bunch of different players in these positions. But as a brother, it still makes me annoyed. Like, I'm still allowed to feel that. So I was annoyed. But I was so happy to see her there. And so I was a mixture of, like, happiness, being excited, a little bit of, like, of course she's here. She deserves to be here. You know, like, validating her. Like, I'm just so proud of you. Like, I was just so happy that she, you know, I'm just so proud. And I felt like she really deserved it. And that I was just sorry that she had to be so emotionally drained the past 2 years. But I feel like it kind of makes it worth it because she got to be there. You know, it was all of the training and all the hard work. I know that she was sad and I know that she would call me and it would be hard to watch, but I know that she would watch every game and she would support them. And of course, Ash is there, so she's very supportive of all the girls and she's really tight with all of them. And she never felt disconnected from the relationships. I just feel like it was challenging to sort of see everyone doing it without an explanation about why you're not there. So I was sort of internalizing those feelings for her when I was there. But to have them win, it just felt like it made it all worth it. You know, it made it, I'm just so happy. That's why I feel like she felt it was the most powerful one for her, because she had tried so, or just worked so hard to get back.
I was trying to earlier pull up another tweet. I know.
Oh, yeah,
following you on Twitter. Yeah. So I did not see, I have not seen the 2011 pictures where you're sobbing and.
Oh, 15.
Or 15, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. But I did see when they won, there's like a video you took, and I mean, Allie ends the game with the ball, right?
I know, it's so crazy.
And I think you're starting to cry, I believe, and you know what I'm talking about. It's like a video, you're like, go on, Allie. And I mean, for me, visually, it's like you can just see that love you have for her and that support. And I mean, again, it's like a fairy, you know, fairy tale ending. She ends with the ball at her feet as the final whistle blows. I mean, It's just special.
It was nice. She said that, I asked her afterwards, I was like, well, because that is in extra time. So I'm like, we're all sort of getting ready because it's 2-0, right? So we sort of know, you sort of have a feeling that they're not going to come back, but you don't, I mean, I have no idea what's happening. You just never know. So I was really anxious and it was getting close and I had set my timer just because I was like, oh my God, it's like 6 minutes. Like, I think it was 6-7 minutes left or something. And so it was at 6 minutes and I'm just like, go on. Like, you have the ball. Like, just take it. Maybe you'll score. Like, I don't know. It's just so, it just felt very good. And I was just recording because I was like, if this is it, like, I just want to be able to have it, you know? So it was, and she's so far away that I couldn't really record her. It would just be like a green image. Yeah. But it was, it was really moving. And that's what I mean. Like, it just felt, I was so happy for her because it just felt very poetic to have her have the ball at the end and to be able to play so well and to be able to go in for Kelly because Kelly got injured and to have them share this time, to be able to share a connection that they have because they both share the same spot. And yeah, it just, you know, Jill, I think said to her, Jill said to her, you know, this is why you're here. You know, this is why you're here, to go in the field when I need you the most and to capitalize and to not like save the day, but it felt like we need you now, you know, like this is, you are such an important part of this team and go bring it home, you know? So it felt really good to know that Jill said that to Allie and that she was very grateful to have her there because she could sort of come in and it would be like nothing was, you know, that there wouldn't be any difference between her and Kelly, or that the game changers, as they call them, the subs, could, I mean, I feel like the bench is so deep that honestly anybody could, you know what I mean? Like, the bench is so good. Like, the whole, like, one time, one game, I was like, they were playing like Thailand and like Carly and Kristen were going on and it was like 11-0 or something. And I'm like, imagine being down and then Carly Lloyd and Kristen Press are coming on the field.
I know.
Like, that's devastating.
Yeah.
Anyway, so it's nice to know that Jill is appreciative of having Allie there. And especially that she can go in when in a time of need, when Kelly just unfortunately got injured. Yeah, it just so, yeah, it just felt very poetic to have her at the ball.
If she's on the team, do we think we'll see you maybe in Japan for the Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go. I've actually never been to Japan, so I would love to go. That would be amazing. I've never been to that part of the world, actually. So I think she's going to try to go for it. I know that she is very excited at the idea. I think they're going to play through like the what's the tour called?
Victory. I think it's the Victory Tour. Yeah.
They're going to play that. And then I guess they'll potentially make the roster and, or like to start revving up in January. Yeah. I would love to see her go again. That would be great. I think that'd be a nice way for her to just like wrap it up for me. Like, I'm like, girl, can we just wrap this up? Like, it's too much stress. Like, I think she'll play for as long as they'll have her,
You
know, like she loves it so much. And she does such a great job. But for me, my anxiety can only take so much. It's almost that I don't even really want to go or watch because it just stresses me out. But I do because I have to. But it's worth it in the end when they win.
Do we see you as maybe an ESPN sportscaster? Oh my God.
Can you imagine? I feel like I am maybe too like controversial per se with my opinions. I feel like I just don't hold back enough. Like, when people were going after them for, like, celebrating goals at the World Cup, like, I was so annoyed. Like, I was just like, and thank God for Heather O'Reilly sat there and, like, kind of shut down that one guy on, I don't even know his name, but talking about, I just think it was a little bit too much. You could just pull back. Like, no, I mean, I am from full, like, I fully believe in the idea that it is more respectful to the team that you're playing to play and to celebrate as if like they are any other team, and that yes, the score is not desirable for them, or the undesirable score, but I feel like I wouldn't want the team to like lighten up or pull back or anything. Like, I would want them to play. Like, this is the biggest stage in the world, and this is the team who's going to win. I mean, they don't know that now, but it's just such an incredible honor to be there, and I feel like it takes away honor if you're sort of like, let's just lighten up for you guys.
I think something Heather also said was, I mean, these girls have worked their entire life for this moment, and they score a goal. Like, how could you not? I mean, this is what you have put in, all the extra hours. You tank your social life for this, and to tell someone, you can't celebrate, but yet I've worked, you know, 20 plus years for this. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
But, Another big thing that came out of the World Cup was the pay discrepancy. Mm-hmm. And we were looking up stats beforehand, looking at the difference in viewership from the men's and the women's World Cup. I mean, where's kind of your stance? I mean, I'm guessing you're supporting your sister and making sure she's paid rightfully so. What did you think at all about that? That kind of came from that. And also, I know there's a lawsuit going on with the women's team.
I think, I know that, so yes, of course I believe that they should be paid equally, especially if they're winning much more than the men are. And it's a shame. And it's frustrating. And it's all of those obvious things. It is, to me, the biggest shame is that when people will sort of say to me, well, the men bring in more money annually, or the FIFA, the Men's World Cup globally brings in more money, this and that. And there's a part of that argument that I feel like is omitted is the fact that we have supported men's sports for so long. Whereas if we would have supported women's sport in the same way that we supported men's sport in whatever the 60s, 70s, I don't even know, and given them the same amount of attention and given them the same amount of visibility and all of that, then potentially it would be different, right? Potentially now that these teams would be at the same level. They would be like at the same visible level, like people would be watching them. But we don't know that because we've never really supported women's sports from the beginning like we've supported men's. So I think that's also part of the case too. You know, like that is, people are like, I know that they're fighting for equal pay because they feel like it was kept from them since the beginning. So I feel like that's a really big part of it. And so, yeah, but of course I feel like it is frustrating, and I feel like it's just a fact that hopefully we are moving away from that. Like, this is a step in the right direction towards equal pay for women. I mean, and like the numbers are like insanely different, you know, and sometimes people will argue viewership, which you and I both know that in the United States, the women's final was watched by more people than the men's. And for US soccer alone, that should be very telling that, you know, people in the United States want to support and watch watch the team. How do you feel about it?
I mean, I think we kind of spoke about the fact that the men losing can make more than the women winning a match. Mm-hmm. So if you take a single match and the U.S. men lose, mm-hmm. but the U.S. women win, they both play Argentina, whatever, mm-hmm. and the men can make more, I mean, that to me just is absurd.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It's like, what? I don't understand the thought process mm-hmm. behind it. And something we also talked about is, I think the U.S. women drive the game. Mm-hmm. You know, people are watching the women's game. I mean, of course, for other countries, but they want to watch the U.S. They're the best team. Whereas the men, you know, I love to watch France and I love to watch Brazil. And, mm-hmm. you know, they kind of get the effect of other countries kind of driving that viewership. Right. So it's kind of my two cents. I think the women deserve equal pay. I think they will get it just because we're kind of at this time where it's just so blatantly obvious, the discrepancies and just the fact that there's like really no reason why. I mean, I just think we're at a great time and mm-hmm. we've got some really powerful voices in those team, and the women are using their voices for the right reason. So I'm really happy for them and what they've done, and I'm hopeful that they will continue having a brighter future.
Yeah, me too. I think it will be. I think the other teams are catching up, though. And I feel like we can't lean on fitness like we have been. Don't get me wrong. I think that we're a great team, and I think we knock it around. I think we need a lot of work, too. You know, just like, and I feel like other teams are getting, it's getting harder to continue to win at the way that we win. And I feel like that's great for the women's game. Like, I don't necessarily want it to be us all the time. I mean, I know that's, I mean, of course, when my sister's playing, I do. Like, you know, I want us to win. But it's only going to help the game that it's just going to get more challenging.
If you looked at the the quarterfinals, I think it was all European teams.
Oh, yeah.
And then us.
Right.
And you've seen in these European countries, they're investing in women's soccer.
Mm-hmm.
For example, Italy. I mean, their team came out of nowhere. When has the Italian women's team ever been a force at the World Cup? And it's because Italy said, okay, let's make a women's league. Let's put money into it. And look what's happened. I mean, it's... Same with the Netherlands. Where did the Netherlands come from? I mean, they, in the World Cup final, were years prior, they couldn't even get out of the round of 16. Yeah. I mean, it just shows that countries, and we're seeing it a lot in Europe, who spend money on their leagues will see improvement, and rightfully so. As you know, in the U.S., we've kind of had trouble with the women's leagues.
Yeah.
We've got to put more money towards it. And, I mean, again, everyone wants to come and play in the NWSL because it's an amazing league. But yeah. I agree. The teams are catching up, and so it'll be interesting to see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I agree, too. Yeah, I hope that it gets just more and more challenging. It'll be more interesting to watch, more fun to watch. And, and you just want sport to continue to grow and to get opportunities for younger women and for or just young kids in general to have something to aspire to and like be able to play all over the world if they want. And it just gives the idea that they can learn new cultures and stuff. Like when Allie played in Germany, you know, just like she was there for 4 or 5 years and she came back, she just grew up there. I feel like she just came back a new person, and to have other kids have that opportunity as well, because these other leagues are strong, is great. You know, yes, play here too. But also the idea of going away and playing too is great. And then you get to like meet other players that you're playing against in the World Cup, and it just makes more of a community, more of a family, more, you know, you don't want sport to divide people. You want it to bring everybody together, even though it sort of divides people, because I feel like I like want, you know, it depends who you're playing, but.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Kyle, thank you so much for giving me part of your time. Great conversation. Do you want to shout out any of your social media handles? Are you here? I mean, I always give the people the opportunity to. You can do so if you would like, or I can put it in the notes of the description.
Oh, yeah, no, it's I'm just at Kyle Krieger on everything, or on Instagram and Twitter. Twitter, proceed with caution. But no, I mean, now that the World Cup's over, I don't really, you know, we'll see. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, at Kyle Krieger is fine.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Hey guys, so I really hope you enjoyed that interview with Kyle. Like I said, he's a really interesting person. He was a great host, and I loved getting to meet him and his dog, Angus. Again, I think the relationship he has with his sister is really special, and it's super unique, and it's just really cool to talk to someone who is related to an Olympic World Cup winning athlete and just to learn the ins and outs of their relationship. What I think would be really great is if I could make this podcast full circle and travel down to Orlando and meet Allie and kind of get the other half of this interview and see how her relationship with Kyle was growing up and just learn more about her soccer career. Anyways, again, as always, I really appreciate your support, and please, please, please hit that like and or subscribe button on whatever podcast platform you're listening on. We're on social media. Please give us a follow on Instagram at TG Footballers Podcast. We're on Twitter at TGF Pod, and we're on Facebook at The Gay Footballers Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or want to get in touch, please feel free to reach out to me at tgfootballerspodcast@gmail.com. As always, again, I thank you guys so much for your love and support. This podcast would mean nothing without you guys, and I hope you have a good rest of your day. Cheers!